Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
Woo! This is Charlton Live.
Good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes, and joining me in the studio here at the Valley as we get ready to gear up and look ahead to Saturday's football for a fiver day here at the Valley against Shrewsbury Down is Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, good.
Yeah?
Good.
Yep. Had a good week?
It's been all right.
Still basking in those 3 points we got at Milton Keynes
last
week?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, excellent. And for once, you're not on holiday. I think it's the first time I've ever seen you not on holiday.
It's a nice change.
Yeah,
we just worked out I've not got one until June now, which is not so good.
Shame, isn't it? Yeah.
Tough life.
Joining the pair of us here at the Valley and fresh from his training session down at Sparrows Lane earlier on today. It's Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, just like Tom was last week. I see his little tweet, getting involved in the dream.
Oh yeah, of course. Oh yeah, Tom, because you mentioned it's your 3-year anniversary on the show.
Yeah, it cropped up on Facebook the other day.
And then you say you stole Nathan's dream and you're living it.
Yeah, we can live it together, mate.
Yeah,
we often do.
Well,
Nathan, how was your training session down at the training ground today with Carl Robinson and with Johnny Jackson and Lee Bowyer?
Yeah, it was intense. Met Bowyer, one of my first ever heroes when I was there, but. Yeah, no, it was really, 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 really good, actually. Mm. I don't know if we'll go into it later, but...
We will indeed go into it later.
Yeah, so... But I'm still here. I'm not signed up.
No.
I might be on a bench, Robbo said.
It's a shame.
Part bench,
Yeah, it's a shame the injury crisis is finished now, because that was your best chance, I guess. Right, so on tonight's show, we have got a fair few things to talk about. Carl Robinson gave us a brief update on what he knows about the takeover earlier today, and when I say brief, it's really brief, because what he knows about the takeover... well, ain't much, but we will hear what he had to say, and we will discuss what sort of we know or what we're hearing is going on in the background. Now, we're also going to hear today from Josh McGuinness. He spoke to us after the Milton Keynes games, and a couple of interesting little bits came out of that interview, so we're going to hear from him. We're going to hear how Nathan's training day down at the training ground went. That was, of course, with the Cheltenham Invicta team, the LGBT-friendly team that the China Athletic Community Trust have lent their name to this season. It used to be Bexley Invicta, so we're going to hear from the people involved in that, including Gary Ginnor, the captain of the team. We're going to hear from Johnny Jackson, who was down there helping as the training the lads, and of course Jason Morgan, the CEO of the Community Trust. Then we're going to start to gear up to look ahead to Saturday's game, Football for a Fiver against Shrewsbury Town. Now, I've spoken to Lewis Cox, who writes for the Shropshire Star. He's their correspondent for Shrewsbury Town, so we're going to find out a little bit more about them, because they are, of course, a surprise package of League One this season, but we haven't actually played him yet because our away game against them got postponed. And then, of course, we will hear from Carl Robinson himself, looking ahead to Saturday's game with the Shrews. So first things first, let's try and give you the takeover update. Like I say, it's very brief what Carl Robinson knows, but he was kind enough to share what he knows about the takeover with us early on this afternoon.
Not got a clue. Not got a clue. This is coming today to watch training, which is most Thursdays. I've had no conversation with Roland. No conversation with Richard, no conversation with the Valley, no one's called me, I do not have a clue. So, I just know that we're playing well, and it will happen, but timing wise on that, that's not my job. I don't get paid enough to start worrying about the boardroom as well as the pitch. Yeah.
So Carl Robinson knows just about as much about the takeover as Roland Du Châtelet knows about running football clubs. He knows nothing. So, I mean, you can see, obviously, now it's 2 weeks now since Rick Everett's tweet about the done deal about, reading further into it, it probably sounds more like it was an agreement of a price, but there's still plenty to be done in terms of how much of that is paid up front. How much of that is paid, you know, in instalments or whatever. They're still negotiating on that front to be done, judging by what we're reading as well. So, I mean, not as nice as it was for Carl Robinson to give us an update, he doesn't seem to be any more informed than the majority of us, sadly.
No, I think we're all in the same boat. I mean, Roland, I haven't spoken to him either. I haven't spoken to Richard Murray either, so... Yeah, he seems to know about as much as we do. I mean, Rick posted the article the other day. I think yesterday it came out about, you know, it's in Roland's best interest to sell as quickly as possible. And he went into a few of the finances and how that's going to look in terms of how much he's going to lose every month that he has to keep paying to fund the club and keep us going. So from our point of view, we obviously hope it happens as quickly as possible. You would think from Roland's point of view, he hopes the same. It looks very much like Rick's original tweet was to say that, look, a price has been agreed. But there are obviously, like any big business, there are things that take time to sort out. And as Carl says, as fans, we've got to now just keep focused on the pitch. And whilst things are going well there, let the takeover happen behind the scenes. And when it happens, it's obviously going to be massive and there's going to be a lot of celebrations. But until that point, focus on the pitch and focus on the team who... having got that result in the weekend and maybe starting to improve again now.
Yeah, you can understand, I guess, the frustrations from the fans. It's still dragging on, especially when it felt like we were so close, Nath.
Yeah, no, it is dragging on, but I was one of the party poopers at the time and said, just wait till it becomes official, because the last thing you want to do is bring your hope. It's the hope that kills you, isn't it? But we don't know why it's obviously taking a while. I don't know, has he moved the goalpost? I mean, there's loads of rumours circulating, but... you know, when rumours start circulating, things get out of hand. But yeah, like Tom said, for me, we've just got to concentrate on, you know, on the pitch at the moment. If we was languishing mid-table, I think we'd be sort of harbouring for it a lot more. But at the moment, my concern is Saturday and the rest of the season with the games coming up, because that's where we want to be. Takeover or not, we want to be in the Championship. So. And that's where my focus is being. What if it happens tomorrow? Brilliant. If it happens at the end of the season, brilliant. Like we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, there's not really too much that can be done if someone does come in tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, recruitment needs to start, but I think Robbo and co know exactly what sort of players they want, regardless of what division we're in.
Mm. Now, Rick Everett, as you said earlier, Tom, did put out a bit of a story on his Voice of the Valley website yesterday. It includes a couple of these lines. He said, the end appeared to be in sight when within 24 hours we heard independently from two unrelated sources, one with legal involvement, that a deal had indeed been done. The second source said the successful party was the Australian consortium. Separately from that, South London Press sports editor Richard Corley reported the same day, which was February the 8th, that I got told earlier a deal was agreed and it was the Australians taking over. But there's a whole lot of information out there, hard to know what is absolutely true. And then Rick goes on to say that Richard's caution was evidently well founded. Now, nearly a fortnight later, there's still no public announcement, which has left his sources mystified, particularly one with insight into what's been a protracted and detailed legal discussion. So I think what Rick's saying there, I think it sounds like his sources are also surprised that nothing's been finalised yet. But I guess, as you say, until everything's 100% done, it's always likely to be delays, and, you know, hugely frustrating as fans, of course, but that's unfortunately just the way these things go.
Yeah, and we've got no reason to think that every takeover that happens takes this amount of time. It's just that we're perhaps lucky, perhaps unlucky enough to know a little bit more about it going on. You know, if we didn't know any of the stuff that Rick has been able to release to us and see those things behind the scenes, you wouldn't know any of it's happening, and suddenly that announcement comes. But when he bought the club, there's nothing to say that didn't take this amount of time as well. Couple that with the fact that we know he's a hard businessman to work with, and he's obviously going to try and get the best deal he can. So I'm sure, although he needs to speed it up from a financial point, he also wants to make sure he gets the best deal he can. So that's going to take time as well. It is frustrating, of course. We've waited for it for so long, but we're getting there. We are getting there. You know, you look at everything else in terms of where we've come over the last 3 years. I mean, the protests, the boycotts, the things being thrown on the pitch, the nets going up behind the goals to stop that. You know, there's been so much that's happened, and all of that has slowed down. The sale now seems to be started. It's just getting that final bit over the line. And of course, we're all desperate for it to happen as soon as we can, and unfortunately, we're just going to have to wait.
It doesn't seem to make any sense, Nate, for Roland to keep dragging this on now, because, I mean, Rick's put in his story there that, you know, with the payroll for the month coming up, and that's something in the region of, you know, £750,000. If you obviously your players get paid a lot of money, and there's staff to be paid as well. So, I mean, it makes no sense for him just to keep hanging on. You know, obviously he's trying to bargain some sort of better deal for him, but at the same time, he'll be losing a lot of money every month. So why is he keeping the deals?
I don't know, it's beyond me. I mean, he'll lose money every week. Because, I mean, obviously with the costs that come out of the club, if you sell it on the 10th of the month, the new owners ain't going to say, all right, we'll pay everything from the first. Yeah. You know, he's going to have to pay it. So I think Rick said in his piece about, you know, he has to accrue the payroll for, if it's 2 weeks, he's still got to pay those 2 weeks. So is he holding out for more money? I don't know. I don't know the price that's been, but if the price has been that's been bandied around is true, then he's getting more than he should deserve anyway. But I don't know. It could be anything. But I do not know. For one, I don't know if he's losing money over fists, which he obviously is, because he obviously wants to sell, because he knows he's never going to make any money from it. But it's beyond me why he's dragging his heels so much. I can only assume he's trying to sort of try and get as much as he can.
And obviously, Rick's article sort of tails off there by saying, as frustrating as this delay is, and, you know, for starters, we have been waiting quite a long time anyway, so a little bit more is just a little bit more. It is important to remember now that the noises coming out of the club are all the club is now for sale, the club will be sold. So it's all steps in the right direction when, as recently as towards the end of last year, the official line was it wasn't for sale. So we're progressing slowly, but we're progressing.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Carl said in his thing today, it's happening, it's going to happen. And I think there was a period even up until a month or two ago where even though these rumours were coming out, we were like, well, is it really going to happen? Are we really going to get out of this? But yeah, I mean, the club have made it pretty public now, and Richard Murray's come out and made his statements. It's very clear the club's for sale. If Rick's to be believed, which I have no reason not to, then something has been agreed. How far down the line that is, again, we're not sure, but yeah, the wheels are in motion. And as I say, because of everything that's gone over the last 3 years, we're so desperate for it to happen quickly. But I agree with Nath. There's nothing that new owners can necessarily do apart from give a new manager bounce, give that confidence to us going into the last couple of months of the season. But as I said, I think on a show a little while ago, the players don't really strike me as the sort of players that need that anyway, because they're not Roland players. They're Cole players, and they're quite distant from all of that anyway. So I don't think it's necessarily going to affect them either way.
I think, and I've just had a sudden thought. Maybe he is hanging on just to try and see where we're going to finish, because that could have, unless he's got some sort of caveat where he gets more money if we go up, or whatever. Maybe that could be why for him to see if we've got a realistic chance of going up. We don't know, but yeah, just need it done.
It's all speculation, really, yeah. Isn't it? But we'll find out sooner rather than later. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. Glove Pup has made us some new jingles, so let's dive in and see what his choice of music has been this time. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Be occupying that left-hand side at the moment. Little step over onto his left foot. Marshall, ball in the box is good. And Rebo, first time.
Oh, what a goal!
Lovely finish!
Oh, what a goal!
Joe Rebo gives Charlton the lead. Great ball in from Mark Marshall on the left-hand side. Chips it in. And Rebo with a calm left-footed volley. And found the bottom right corner and Charlton have the lead.
Welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. That was Glove Pop's choice of music. Decisions.
Pony.
Pretty poor.
Pretty poor. Well,
it's... No, what is that? It sounds like it's from. What's that?
It sounds like it's from a film. Yeah, or something. Yeah.
I'm glad you said it.
Only Glove Pup can answer that question. Right, on. I hope he's listening. On Saturday, obviously, we were victorious up at Milton Keynes, and Josh McGuinness scored our second and what turned out to be the winner in that game. It was his third goal in four games after his little barren spell where I think he went 14 appearances without finding the back of the net for us. Now, we were lucky enough to get to speak to Josh after the game on Saturday, so I'm going to play you a couple of clips. clips from that. We'll come out and discuss it. This is what Josh McGinnis has to say on his recent good form, and of course the fact that he has deleted his account on Twitter.
Yeah, delighted. You know, I said, you know, obviously for a striker it's massive to score goals, but started the season that happened, and then we were winning and I wasn't getting on the score sheet, but then I went on a dip where we weren't winning and I wasn't scoring. It was getting hard, but just believing the gaffer's trusted in me, he keeps playing me. I keep working hard in training, and I know with the quality that we have, like the ball that came in today for my header, you know, it would have been nearly impossible for me to miss, and it managed to go in. So the lads are back in full confidence and we're creating chances, which is a massive thing, because we went a long time where we weren't creating anything. So there's a good buzz about the place, and as I say, finishing in that top six, the confidence can only push on.
We know obviously as strikers you'd be judged on your goals, but I think when you're going through that spell just before, I mean, do you think that what else you were bringing to the team was perhaps being forgotten by supporters because you weren't getting those goals?
No, you know, supporters pay their money, they're entitled to their opinion. And you just got to take it on the chin, whether you like it or not. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get it. So hopefully it's not personal. I don't think it is. As you see, when you score, they start singing your name again. So football swings in circles. You can't take anything personal if you know you're in the wrong business. So it's always nice to score. Since I've been here, the support's been nothing but brilliant, especially towards myself and the lads. So hopefully it'll continue. And not only myself, but more importantly, the team will go on a run and we can put some distance between who's below us.
You're proving doubt was wrong. Like Lewis said, you have 3 goals in 4 games now.
I don't know. I've always had doubters my whole career, and if that's what you call them, then fair enough. It's just, obviously strikers there to score goals, but I know my place in this team and what the gaffer expects of me. Of course he expects me to score goals, but he expects me to do a multitude of other stuff, and when you don't score and you don't score for the amount of time that I did, obviously you're going to have people asking questions, and you just got to take it on the chin. You can't take it personal. Footballs can be up and down, it's a roller coaster. You're never in the middle, you either are sky high or you're lower than a snake's belly under a top hat. So you've just got to go with it, and then if there is doubters, you just try and keep your head down, work hard and try and prove them wrong. And the form of men at the minute, I feel great. My midfielders the other wide men are finding me, and it's making me even play even better, because I know I've got the quality around me and they'll create chances for me. And as I've always said, it's just up for me to put them away. So if there's doubters, then of course that's just football. You know, people still have doubts over Ronaldo and Messi. So with me, it's you've just got to take it on the chin and just push short. But as I said, the support I've had since I've come here has been nothing but great.
You win this run early on in the season, and during that, obviously the players came in for a bit of, you know, abuse on social media, like you know all players do at all clubs. I think you deleted your Twitter profile. Did it have anything to do with that?
No, there was a multitude of stuff, but there's only so many things that you can see without it trying to affect you. So my mum always said, if you don't want to see it, don't look at it. So the easiest thing for me was just to come off it and just leave it for a while. Probably end up going back on in a couple of months, but just don't need to keep seeing it all. I've got my Instagram and that's all I need, but social media wise, it is very helpful in a lot of avenues, but sometimes for me it's easier just to take a step back, you know, and stop maybe not get caught up in it, strip it back. I've done a lot of video analysis with the guys at the team, and I just concentrating Monday to Friday, you know, and it seemed to be working. So whether or not I go back on, I don't know, but just looking forward to my football now.
So there it is, great to hear from Josh McGinnis, the man in form once again at the top of the pitch there, talking about his recent good form, of course, and the fact that he's you know, that his support and the fact that he's had to delete his Twitter account or suspend it or whatever you want to call it, and you know, about perhaps sometimes the stick that fans can get. Let's talk about his form first. I mean, he's back on it now. Three goals in 4 games. You know, I always knew he had that in him. But he did go through that horribly lean spell, and so he needed to do it as soon as possible, really, because that was, you know, his doubters were then coming to the fore because he wasn't producing the goods on the pitch.
Yeah, and on this show we defended him pretty consistently, I think, but we did say that whilst we defend him and we think his work ethic's good and the defensive stuff that he gives to the side and all of that, he's a striker and he's going to be judged on his goals. And whilst he wasn't scoring, it got harder and harder to defend him because, as I say, that's his job. His job is to go there and score goals, and he wasn't really doing that. But credit to him, he stuck at it. I think partly through necessity, Carl had to stick with him because he didn't have many other options. But at the same time, he kept playing, and Josh's head himself didn't really go down. And he's got back amongst the goals now. And when you combine that with the other work that he does, it's obviously a massive asset to us. And he needs to keep that up. We're going to need him to get at least another 5 or 6 goals between now and the end of the season, I would think.
But yeah, whilst he's on this run, it obviously bodes very well.
And the sort of goals that he's been scoring over the last couple of weeks. I mean, if you look at the goal he scored against, was it Walsall? I think it was his first one back, where it was one where he was right on the line to touch in a low cross. And then a couple of the goals were more used to seeing him scoring, headers as well. But again, you know, in the right position to score him. But in particular, that Walsall goal, the fact he was there to finish off that chance. I mean, that's where you want your striker to be. And that's where perhaps over the last few weeks he hadn't been finishing, but now he seems to have found that touch again.
Yeah, no, I mean, we know what Josh is good in the air, and obviously he's been getting himself in the right position, like MK Dons, he's got himself on the end of the cross. I just think there have been a few games this season where maybe his composure has let him down a little bit, maybe his technique and his finishing, but, you know, it happens. You know, if he was scoring every single game, then obviously he wouldn't be playing in League One, but... Yeah, no, I think he's delighted, and he started to, like Tom said, his head didn't drop, and he started to get himself about the goals now, and hopefully we can he can maintain it, because we're still not, you know, blessed with depth. I know we've got a Nicky back now and so forth, but yeah, it's nice to see Josh to get his just rewards, because we've all said, we've banged the drum for ages that, you know, he works hard for the team, and he does a lot more for Carl and the team than just obviously getting his nugget on things.
In terms of the fact that now there's a little bit of backup to him, or perhaps a little bit of competition, and you've got Jose's back, you've got Zyro. I mean, did you think that's sort of spurring him on a little bit?
I think it probably helps. Yeah, I think having some competition is gonna maybe push him that little bit harder. But I also think, you know, players do come in and out of form, and through those periods, it's not like we've been blistering and blowing teams away. You know, he has had some opportunities. I mean, even if you go back as far as the Plymouth game originally, I mean, he had chances to score in that one and wasn't able to do it. So that's going to happen to any striker. But yeah, I mean, Zyro so far we haven't seen a huge amount of. But Jose, okay, it was only one season at Swindon, but he's proven that he can do it at this level. So. Yeah, I think any competition is healthy, and if they can keep pushing him for the rest of the season, I mean, I'd still pick Josh whilst he's scoring every day of the week. But yeah, competition's going to help, hopefully, keep that form up.
Now, obviously, we heard there he was talking about the support from the stands. He said the support is always very good for him, he feels, overall. But obviously, it's fair to say, you know, he was asked about his doubters, and whether you call it doubters or just people who are frustrated the fact he didn't score, you know, he pointed out, you know, now he has scored the last couple of games, they're singing his name again. But and the other point was about his Twitter account. I think it was Jake from Newshop there who mentioned that he has suspended or deleted his Twitter account, and he spoke about that, and he said there's only so much stuff you can read. Now, I think it's probably fair to assume that when he's saying there's only so much stuff you can read, it is about fans tweeting the player to tell him he's not had a very good game. Now, obviously, there's different levels of it. There's constructive criticism, which, you know, sometimes people do tweet to the players. There's obviously just abuse that people tweet to players. Everyone gets abuse on Twitter. I get my fair share, sure enough, as well. Now I was discussing this because we wrote up the interview on Monday for the South London Press, and we were discussing, I was discussing on Twitter, you know, what motivates a fan to try and send that sort of stuff or to talk about players in, you know, directly to them. Now, in my opinion, obviously Twitter's there to chat about football as well as many other things, but Saturday evening, there's no better place to get your discussion about football, and that's why the fans talk to each other, and that's perfect. You know, emotions run high, particularly at full time and for the next couple of hours, but that's a great place to chat about the performance with fellow fans and like-minded fans, and, you know, you can send your email into Charlton Live as well, of course. Now, copying the players into a tweet when a player's had a particularly bad game, and we know when a player's had a bad game, he knows when he's had a bad game. Now, some fans like to copy the players into the tweets, some don't. Now, I mean, what's your views on that? Because I have my views. I don't think it particularly helps, especially if it's a particularly abusive tweet, to send it to the player. I mean, it's up to each individual fan how they want to do it, but so I'm not telling someone they can or can't do that, but it's more the thought process behind it, what they think they'd achieve from that. I mean, because do you think some fans will think that might motivate them?
I think I would say, you know, 99% of it's done out of frustration of the result. I think it's a lot of heat in the moment sort of thing, and when people look back at it, it's not really that clever of it. But like you say, people are entitled to do what they got to do. I personally don't agree with that in someone. Abuse, anyway. I mean, if you added someone and said, you know, oh, you didn't really have a good game today, but, you know, on to the next one, then fine. But I think when it goes really personal and saying, you're this, you're that, you know, whatever else, I just think, you know, I know players are big enough and they're probably used to it, and, you know, they probably hear a load of stuff on the sideline. I think it probably will go over their heads most of the time, but I just don't agree with it personally. I mean, we've sat here before when, you know, I wasn't Morgan Fox's biggest fan, but when he got booed off, I was fuming. Mackinock as well. I just don't see how it helps the situation. You know, you want a player to really put 110% in. Well, get behind the lad. He knows he's had a bad game. You know, he's not blind.
Well, it was interesting, really, what Josh said there. We talked about, coming off his Twitter account on advice of his mother, by sounds of it. So if you don't want to see it, don't read it. And then he goes on to say, well, you know, we do video analysis with the guys in the club. No, so that's what I mean. Like, he knows he's had a bad game. You know, Brett, the analyst, was saying that was bad. You need to improve that. And Carl, I'm certainly be putting a rocket where he doesn't want one as well. So it's not like he doesn't know, but it is a case for me, just a motivational thing. You know, you need to, like I say, I mean, everyone's entitled to their say, and that's why I think Twitter's perfect for that. Especially, you know, speaking to other fans, and like I say, you're more than welcome to slag players off on our show, because, you know, it keeps us going sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, it's just a case of, you can see in Josh's case, he's forced to take his account offline. Obviously, there is a little bit of, you know, it's up to the player to do that, to make the decision, I don't need to read this. But at the same time, I guess as a fan, you know, it's all well and, you know, we love praising the players on Twitter when they've had a good game. I think that's a good thing to do, because it helps. You know, we're all together as a team, even if they have let us down.
I think as well, like, we're quite fortunate, particularly being, or we're not fortunate to be at this level, but the fact that we're at this level, and with how social media is now, that it's quite a good way to get access to players. And people like Jacko have maybe earned that respect now, you know, to be able to get that close to them and message them and have that avenue of communication is obviously great. And I'm not going to try and compare football to a normal office job, because obviously you can't really, but in any walk of life, if you've got people, you know, if you do go to work, whatever you do, you know when you've had a bad day, and you don't need people coming up and telling you that all the time. Now, obviously football's an entertainment purpose, and with fans of a job, if you like, it is very different, but it must be difficult for them. And for coming on this show, we're kind of privileged in that I've always thought that if I'm not going to say it on the show, then don't tweet it, because it's the same thing, it goes out into the public. But there are people who, like Nath says, you know, you finish a game, you're angry. How many times have we come on here and said, you know, we left or we were walking out because we were annoyed? And if people go that one step further and they need someone to just vent at, they choose the players. I understand why some people do it. As like Nath, I wouldn't do it myself, but you see why that happens. But yeah, it's frustrating that he's felt he had to come off. Like I say, his form has improved recently, and he seems to be doing well, which is obviously great. And just being, you know, around that interview on Saturday, you can see what a decent bloke he is. But it is a shame when players feel they have to do that, because, as I say, it's nice to have that avenue to players for people who wouldn't otherwise get the chance.
Yeah, and you do mention he does seem like a really nice bloke every time I've had the pleasure of interviewing him. Now, he did use a phrase I've never heard of on Saturday, where it says football's a roller coaster. One minute you're like up in the sky, and next you're lower than a snake's belly. Understand that bit. Under a top hat. What's the top hat doing? Put a snake in a top hat? That's animal cruelty.
When I heard that, I was spent ages trying to picture it and then understand the logic in it. But it must be some sort of Northern Irish sound, because I've never heard of that in my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, snake's bellies are notoriously low. They're literally on the ground.
Yeah, that bit I do. I don't know where the top hat's come from.
It's some sort of magician? I don't know.
Don't know. There's someone out there is going to know, surely. Yeah.
So if you know the origins of that, let us know, because we're baffled by it. Right, let's have another quick break. Another Glove Pup special on the way. Next up, we're going to hear from a few of the guys who are down at the Charlton Invicta training session today.
Of the Oxford defence, and Foster will try and close it down, and Mussolini gets himself in a bit of trouble. It comes to McGuinness on the edge of the penalty. A good challenge from Mussolini. Cashy gets there first. Cashy in the penalty area. Cashy!
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more.
That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Oh, yes!
And McCaslin!
What a finish!
His first goal of the season! Beats Eastwood! Diver to his right side. Cashy's running around the valley. Absolutely delighted for him.
McGuinness has stayed down though from the challenge.
And Charlton take the lead here at the valley.
Welcome back. This is Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. This is the big match preview. We're going to look ahead to Saturday's Football for a Fiver game with Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury, whoever it is, in a few moments' time. Now, today, the Charlton Invicta side, the Charlton Athletic Community Trust Invicta team, to give them their full title. They were invited down to the training ground to have a training session with first team manager Carl Robinson and his coaches, you know, assistant manager and coaches Lee Bowyer and obviously the captain and coach Johnny Jackson. Nathan, you often train with the Charlton Invicta team on a Tuesday down at Sparrows Lane, but you asked to go down there today and it sounds like you were really put through your paces.
Yes, yeah. I think his name was Ben, one of the works with Josh in the Sports Scientist. He put us through a warm up, which I thought felt like a 45-minute half. but no, yeah, it was good. We basically just, do you want me to quickly outline the three bits?
Yeah, go on.
Basically, you've done a warm up, and then you had a session with Robbo, a session with Jacko and Bowes. Robbo was more, which was the impressive thing is they trained it as if. You might hear Robbo talk about passing aggressively through the thirds. I don't know, he says that quite a lot, and we was doing a lot of training that. So Robbo's one was passing and moving a lot around the cones. Jacko's was, you had three sections, four sets of different players, and then you had to do a certain amount of passes and then pass it through the thirds aggressively, trying to get to the other side. And then Bowes was more or less like a really wide sort of rectangle, and it was like one touch, pass and move. I tell you what, it's absolutely brilliant. But I don't. People doubting those players' fitness. Listen. I'm not. My body ain't a tempo, as you can probably see. But it was intense, and
yeah.
Right, but it was amazing. It was amazing. Obviously, Bowes was my first ever favourite player. But it was a good day all round. There was a lot of the news crews down there, so. It looks like, yeah, we've got quite a lot of exposure for it, which is great.
Yeah, obviously, it's been football versus homophobia month this month. And at the, what home game was it where I spoke to Rob? I can't remember. One of the recent home games, they had the Invicta lot and the Proud Valiants down pitch side. And I spoke to Rob Harris, who's the chair of the Proud Valiants. So the club's obviously gone all out. They had their own, it was the Oxford game, yeah, yeah. Ended in tears, actually. But they had the whole day around the match day. Now, they've obviously done this as well for the Charlton Invicta team, who are absolutely walking their league as well, by the sounds of it. Mm. But it shows the club are really trying to get involved and make sure that people who are LGBT feel more than welcome down here at the Valley, and things like this all sort of goes towards helping it, I guess.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'll retweet the sort of video they sent me earlier. It's just sort of an introduction, what it's about. And yeah, I mean, it's a great way of, it's a platform for people who, you know, who are quite afraid of their sexuality. It's a platform where they can go and express themselves, because quite a lot of, you know, gay and lesbian people feel that they can't go into a football team because they're scared of the abuse that they'll get or the discrimination they'll come across. But no, it's a great platform, and it's a great cause, and you know, a club like ours, who are absolutely magnificent in what the trust do, is absolutely superb. And yeah, it's going places, and it's proved to be very successful, and it's still early stages.
Yeah. So of the players who are down there today, have anyone got that shot of being discovered late on, like Ian Wright was? He was plucked out of non-league.
Well, to be fair, we've got some good players down there. There was a couple of we've got a couple that used to play in youth level, a couple for a team down the road, not Freddie's favourite team, Palace, but the other lot, and Arsenal. But yeah, we've got some good players down there, and there's a couple in there that could have made it, but we're probably slightly a bit over that hill now. But, but yeah, no, it was a good crack, and really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and interacting with, like, say, Robinson, Boyo's a hero of yours, and Jacko is a hero of everyone's.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, they were good as gold. I mean, we thought they were gonna, they did ease us in gently, but then once she was in full swing. Yeah, it was pretty intense, but it wasn't a case that you went there and just kicked a ball. They actually coach you and how you make yourself a better player, and everything they said made sense, and the little snippets, even at I'm 31, there's still things that you still learn, and it was absolutely brilliant.
I'm not shocked to find out the stuff you've got to learn in the game though. I mean, what was your weaknesses that were picked out?
My weaknesses, but my fitness. Without a shadow of a doubt, I'm not going to lie. But no, it was really good, and it was amazing that they took the time out, really, because I know obviously Rob had a busy day with press and stuff.
Excellent. Right, so down at the training ground today, I gave Nathan one of his first, he's done interviews before, but not too often, but one of his first interviews that he's done was with Gary Ginnor, who is the captain of the Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust Invicta team. We've also got audio here from Jason Morgan, who's the CEO of the Community Trust, and of course skipper Johnny Jackson. So let's hear what those guys had to say about today's Cheltenham Invicta training day down at the training ground.
We was obviously set up in 2011 as Bexley Invicta, and we went through a period of transition. We were losing players, losing money, and we didn't have a stable home or a stable base to really take the club forward on. And my boyfriend Sam kept on suggesting that I contact some people that I knew at the trust, the community trust, to see if we could get any help from them, and that's how it started. We had a meeting pretty much 2 years ago with Sean Daly and Matt Parrish, and it sort of flowed from there. But it's hard work on and off the pitch to get things set up. We started training down at the training ground in August 2016, and we finished fourth last season in the London Unity League. And over the course of last summer, the discussions evolved around taking it to the next level, and the next level was to rebrand to Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust Invicta.
If you look at what we've done over the years and how we've addressed issues in society, and how we've taken it to hopefully the highest level we can, this is a big part of it. So yes, there's the rainbow laces, and yes, there's the, you know, chant versus, or football versus homophobia. But for us, it's about taking it to the next level, and that's why we're immensely proud to be the first affiliated, you know, or first to formally affiliate this team to us, which is important. And then we've got things planned going forward. So it just adds the team to the family that we've got as part of the club, which is immensely important, and we should be proud of that.
Jacko, the lads from Captain Victor are down this afternoon. Yourself, Bo and Carl putting on training sessions for him. How have they been getting on?
They've been doing really well, actually. Quite surprised by the standard, but I just put a little transfer keeper on that we do with the first team quite regularly, and they got it straight away. It was good intensity to it. They closed down well. I was wondering, like, you know, what the fitness would be like and how long you could keep the practice going for, but they managed to do the whole time, and showed good glimpses of quality as well.
I mean, how much has the trust done for the Victor? You know, what have they brought to the table?
I think the support, the main aspect for us and for me personally, I mean, is playing on pitches like this. You know, the facilities down here to play and train on are massive for us, and it's given us a stable home to build around. You know, and it's given us a something to entice players to come along and join the team. We average sort of 20 to 22 players down here on a Tuesday night, which you know, historically we used to struggle to get 8 or 9 or 10 on a Thursday night when we used to train in Dartford. So that's a massive impact for us. We've had some training sessions with some of the community trust coaches. We've obviously got the new Cheltenham red kits, you know, which is great for me as a Cheltenham fan, you know, to be playing in a Cheltenham kit with my name on the back. So things like that, you know, is fantastic.
We were front runners in combating racism a few years ago, and now we're front runners on this. Why is it that we're always front runners in things like this?
Because I've just got a team that look to see how high they can take projects and programs and individual strands, and I just encourage that, you know, and we don't sit there and just play lip service or something. And I think this is an example of it, and it's worth pointing out that, forget the film crews that have come and covered this, Carl was always going to do this. You know, Carl and the team got approached quite a while ago to come and do a coaching session, and was more than happy to support it. Was there at the launch, speaks passionately about it. And for us, over the years, you know, having the link with the players and the manager and where we're based is important. And the guys coming out and doing the coaching session today means a lot to us, and I know it means a lot to Invicta, and that's just important. But for us, you know, if we can drive this message and we can educate and we can break down barriers and we can keep addressing you know, issues in society, then that's our responsibility.
As far as I'm aware, I think they're flying high at the top of their top of their league. Can you see why they're doing so well?
I can, yeah. I've seen some good quality. Even in this one Bo's doing now can be pretty difficult, because you're asking them to play one touch quite a lot, one and two touch, and that's what we're trying to get them to do this morning: move the ball quick and play one and two touch, and that can be difficult if you haven't got the quality of player. But they've taken to it straight.
I mean, in terms of the players that are here, I mean, it's quite an inclusive sort of environment, so anyone can sort of come along and join, can't they? And I mean, if there was someone out there, a gay man, if anyone wanted to come in, how could he come about for joining Cheltenham Invicta?
Yeah, I mean, we're on social media, we're on Twitter and Facebook, and the new website will be up and running shortly. But you've only got to contact somebody either at our team or Cheltenham Athletic Football Club, or even the Community Trust or the Proud Valiants. We're all connected to each other, and they'll put you in touch. We've only got, I say the team is sort of split of two-thirds of the team are straight guys and one-third that are gay guys, but you couldn't tell the difference, and everyone's friends on and off the pitch, and all we want to do is come down here and play football and work hard and hopefully be successful and have something to look back on in years to come, that we achieve something together and we made it.
For the run of De Silva, he's looking to get beyond Kane, but Kane, well, he played the ball and De Silva's nipped in and taken it off him, back into the ball. Superbly finished by Josh McGuinness. Lovely work from De Silva to rob
Kane
on the right hand side, the Charlton left outside the penalty area. He nipped into the penalty area along the touchline, ball back into the 6-yard box, and finished by McGuinness.
Onside, that's a good pullback, Ambrose, and that's a deserved and very well worked goal. First league goal in 281 minutes. Onside, the flag stayed down, a very intelligent pullback, the left-footed finish. Charlton touches it to Thomas, and Charlton again quick on the break. He has Darren Benton support, head down, he's gone for it and score! Thomas has looked bright so far. And Davenport didn't get close enough to get the tackle in. So, he was lucky, but where he's played, he deserves a little bit of fortune. Roy Hasselbank strong in the challenge, and Darren Bent's onside. This could be 3-0 before half-time. It is! Charlton Athletic here have a lifeline for survival. Strength in the challenge from Hasselbank. Bent beyond a flagging back four. The pass alongside Anton Ferdinand. No cover. 3-0. Charlton have looked sharper and hungrier and more cohesive throughout. The home side can now break. Ambrose to run at Konchesky. In towards Thomas! Oh, that is a beautiful goal! Ben fed Ambrose and then makes a gesture to Ambrose. Points, in it comes. West Ham ball watching. Thomas gets his second. Charlton heading for their biggest home win against West Ham United.
Wish we were there. It takes us back to our relegation season when we beat West Ham United 4-0. Obviously, managed by Alan Kirbishley, of all people. And we had Alan Pardew. Somehow, Alan Pardew beat Alan Kirbishley 4-0. just proves that anything can happen in football. We still got relegated anyway. So that was
still all, getting jobs, isn't he?
Yeah,
somehow.
Yeah, ultimately pointless. He's only got a couple of games to save his job at West Brom. Yeah, hopefully, he's better at saving that job than he is at saving taxis from being stolen.
And his jacket
in Spain.
And his wallet, yeah.
Yeah. Right, let's gear up for Saturday's home game with Shrewsbury. Don't forget, it's football for a fiver. So you fancy coming down? Only cost you £5. Exactly bargain. What it says on the tin. Yeah, it would be a bargain. This is something I'd hope to do a bit more often on the show. I just so happened to have a spare bit of time yesterday, so I managed to get in contact with a journalist I know who covers Salop for the Shropshire Star. It's a guy called Lewis Cox. I spoke to him last night to find out the lowdown, because Shrewsbury really have been the surprise package of the season. So I want to know what has been the secret to their success.
It's quite strange to talk about it now, because I was having this sort of conversation so often at the start of the season, and everyone was like, oh, you know, it's just a quick start, you know, when are they going to tail off? And people are still asking, like, when are they going to blow up or whatever? But yeah, I mean, it's been unbelievable, and it almost feels like the norm now, which is strange. What have we played, 34 games or something like that? They've just held it up, and it's just been they're more than the sum of their parts. You know, there's no standout star. There's a lot of the cliches, really. A lot of hard work and organisation and sort of spirit and togetherness. It can really get you far in League One if you've got the right setup. You know, the right, I dare say, manager and group of players with the right mentality, then that's really put them in the position where they are. Of course, they've got quality as well, but, you know, with the best will in the world, not the quality that Wigan and Blackburn have got. Not the quality that Charlton have got either, to be fair, or probably any team in the top half, but, you know, they make up for it in other ways.
Yeah, and what about the job that Paul Hurst has done since he came in? So I think if he came in midway through last season and, you know, kept them up, and then what he's achieved this season as well. I mean, the fans must be really pleased with how he's done.
Yeah, miraculous, really. I mean, the manager and sort of assistant were laughing a few weeks ago and saying, you know, they still reckon the job. They came in last, sort of late October, last season, and they were rock bottom and heading down. I think we lost maybe 3-0 or something down your place early part of last season.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
They were bottom and pretty hopeless, and he came in and kept them up, and that was a miracle, really. I mean, because the turnaround was massive in Jan. But you know, no one in their right mind would have said this. That the kind of neutral, the media put them as relegation favourites. You know, there was a predicted league table from the press before the start of the season, and it had them to finish second bottom. So the manager stuck that up in the changing rooms at the training ground, and it's still up there now. And you know, they're second top, and they've been top for a long time, and unbelievable. If any, you know, before the season started, if someone had said you'd have safety mid-table, town fans would have absolutely bitten your hand off. Like, that would have been fantastic. You know, great not having to worry about the drop. Top half would have been brilliant. You know, playoffs is miraculous, and yeah, unbelievable. Really, they're pinching themselves, and it's a dream season. It's like it's a once in a generation season for them. It really is. We're talking, you know, sort of 3-4 decades. So fans are just hoping. You know, there's been a couple of tough results lately. They're just hoping it doesn't sort of blow up, and they can just take it sort of 10 games further. You know,
I was going to say, because I think, without having seen them play, I think I was probably one of them expecting to do what Scunthorpe did last season, where Scunthorpe started so well and then ended up dropping off a little bit. I mean, has there been any sign of that? Because I know I think they haven't won in three at home. Has there been any sign of that at all?
It's four after last. Tuesday night, they drew at home to who was it last night?
Gillingham.
Yeah. They drew at home last night. Yeah, and that was four. So it's four at home without a win now, and that's two draws and two defeats. And it's not ideal to not be winning your home games, sort of where your fans are and so on. But on the flip side of that, they've won three away on the bounce, which is sort of the opposite to how it was going in the early part of the season, which is kind of ironic. But they want to sort the home form out. They certainly do, and I'm sure they will. But I suppose Charlton fans should, you know, maybe be wary that they've won the three away in a row. Some great wins. They went to Portsmouth and won 1-0, went to Bristol Rovers and won at Fleetwood. So away from form's been really good lately, yeah.
Yeah. So what players should Charlton fans be looking out for on Saturday at the Valley?
So the kind of go-to answer I've been giving all season is the central midfielder, John Nolan. He's their best player technically. He's sort of a small, slight centre midfielder. Gets them playing, skillful, great pass. Sort of their creator. And if he's playing well, they are. But he missed Tuesday's game with an illness. And it's the first time he's been missing in the league all season. That's how important it is for them. So they'll hope he's back in the centre of midfield. Otherwise, they're big on the width. Sean Worley, number 7, right winger, an incredible season. Double figures for goals. He's got 10 goals from the wing, as well as his 13th assist he got the other night. A fantastic effort. And the other wingers, Rodman's another one, and one that will probably play, Nathan Thomas, who's on loan from Sheffield United, coming in Jan. Good players. They're good out wide.
And so how do you see it going this weekend? I know that, I think from following your tweets, that Shrewsbury seem to have a bit of a tendency to score late goals, and Charlton have had a bit of a tendency to let them in this season. So it'd be interesting to see if that comes into play. But I mean, how do you see it going this Saturday?
Hearing that, you know, they have conceded a few late on, that will certainly boost Town. And Town, I'm sure, will look at that. Because the late goal thing is down to a fitness thing. Paul Hurst wanted the fittest side in the league. Made no sort of... you know, embarrassment about that, and you know, he's got it. They've been fitter than every other team. That's why they've gone till the end. It's a spirit thing as well. It's a bit of both. Mm. So if Charlton, you know, might get caught cold at the end, there, that could be a big factor. I think Town will want a response from giving up the 3 points on Tuesday and getting a draw. The away form's been good. Charlton are having a decent time, aren't you? In the playoff places, and I haven't seen any of them this season, but they've got, from what I hear and other people say, they've got talented players, you know, who are on their day. And I know obviously who they signed in January with Kai Kai, who we know all about, you know, on their day. They can take any team apart, I'm sure, but Town will hope that their sort of attributes in terms of probably working harder and probably being more organised, you know, certainly like they've been away recently, will get them over the line.
So that was Lewis Cox there from the Shropshire Star, who was kind enough to join me on the phone last night to discuss this, let's say, League One surprise package this season, really, in the form of Shrewsbury. The interview was actually a bit longer than that. I'll cut a little bit out, because it was quite interesting. On Tuesday, when they drew at home with Gillingham, their manager actually came out and had a bit of a go at the fans, who booed the side at full time, you know, some of them. But there was also quite a low crowd at Shrewsbury's ground, I think under 5,000 as well, for a team that's obviously in the top two. So disappointed there. So perhaps, you know, just with that little bit of home form, you just wonder if maybe this is where this they're going to start to be tested slightly. But their away form is so good, so it's going to be a really interesting game on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the toughest games we've had here. I mean, obviously Wigan came here and blew us away, but aside from that, really, even the games we've lost here, we've been in the games. Think back to Oxford, we just threw that away, really. But yeah, Shrewsbury started the season so well, and like you said there in the interview, you thought, I think everyone thought, we'd probably go back to shows we did, and you thought they were going to drop off, and they haven't. And just having a look back to their fixtures, even as far as late last year, the games they've won have only been by a goal. So there's only been one game that's had a 3 in the scoreline, and that was a defeat, 3-1 to Blackburn Rovers. So they're low scoring games, so it's going to be tight, but it's going to be one of the toughest games we've had, I think.
Excellent. Right, well, Carl Robinson, obviously, he looked ahead to Saturday's game as well. So let's hear what Carl says as we look ahead to the Shrews coming to the Valley on Saturday.
I went to watch Shrewsbury on Tuesday. What an unbelievable, honest team. Very hard working, very well coached. Very few flaws in their game. I know they've rested one or two players. They'll be back in for Saturday. And we're really excited by it. I think it's probably one of the best managerial jobs of the year, bar none. It's incredible what he's achieved, Paul and the staff, and we've got to be ready for him.
They surprised many people this season. Have they surprised you?
100%. Regardless of whatever their outcome of their season is from now, whether they automatic playoff or whatever that may be, you just got to tip your hat to them. It's been one of the best. You look around the leagues, I don't think many people can really look at anything better than what they've achieved. Okay, yeah, they've kept the same players fit. They've made a few changes on Tuesday, But theoretically, they've kept the same team, same shape, and then just roll them out week in, week out. Very honest, very hard-working, very well drilled, very well coached. People just say it's just about the work. I think it's not. You can see how well they've been coached. Don't know Hirsty as well. One of Richie's best friends, Bach's best friends. I always spoke very highly of him as a person. Everybody who knows him saying how good he is away from the game. So we're looking forward to it. But it's just another game of football. There's no.
Are you expecting them to play an expansive game?
No. I expect them to play an aggressive game. An honest game. And we've looked at how they score goals, where they score goals, where they encourage regains. So no, we're fully aware of all of their strengths and weaknesses. It's one thing knowing them, it's stopping an honest team. That's certainly what they are.
And he touched on it earlier, the Valley should be rocking, wasn't it? Prices have been slashed. You're expecting a really big crowd and a good atmosphere.
That's the objective. I think they do it every year. But listen, with all due respect, we know one day that our objective is to get over 20,000 consistently in that stadium without cutting the price. But we hope by people coming back in the stadium or young fans coming back in the stadium. I think Shrewsbury bringing in 1,000 fans, which is testament to them. But one day we hope this is to be the norm. This can't be a one-off. We want one day to make this club as good as what it has been in future in recent years. And that's really toppling these attendances. And that's our objective, to try and do that.
And on the injury front, any players available to you that were not available to you last weekend?
Yeah, they're all back, we think. Tariq will be back in the squad. He trains today. There's only Steffi and Billy that we won't have available. And Steffi's coming on wonderfully well. He had another scan, which was still some sort of signs of injury there, but real good improvement. And he won't be long before he's back as well. So it's as you were. And on Monday, Piercy, Nicky, Michael, all played minutes. Pagey. So it's looking good. I've got to leave three players out of the squad Saturday. We're like I say, we should have won 6 of the last 7 against good teams. And everyone's getting back fit. And there's a buzz around the place.
Is Jason Pearce 100% fit now?
100% fit. They all are. Pat's fit, he's fit, Nabby's fit, Ezra's fit, Souls is fit, Jay's fit, Cashy's fit, Jake's fit. Fresh, good week training. We're really looking forward to it. But listen, it's one of the hardest games of the season. And you need everybody to be fresh and ready to go.
So there we go. Carl's obviously very eager for Saturday to come around and to get his teeth stuck into this this encounter with Shrewsbury Town here at the Valley. Talking about the fitness of the squad, it sounds like the majority of players now, so we know about Billy Clark, and I think Lewis Page is sort of on the way back, but not quite there yet. The majority of them are back now. Whether Tariq Fossey is actually going to be fit enough to start, we don't know. Further on in press day, Carl said he wasn't going to say that over the camera for Paul Hurst to know. But with players coming back, decisions to be made all over the team. Now, does Jason Pearce come straight back into the team? In terms of the midfield, I mean, there's plenty of head-scratching to go on there, especially with Joe Arriba playing so well in the number 10 role last week. But yeah, starting at the defence, do you think Jason Pearce does come in and start now? I mean, Bauer went off injured last week, but yeah, it sounds like he'd be okay. But
for that reason alone, I would. I think if you are going to bring him in, it's him or Bauer. I think you want Konsa there because you want someone who's a bit more skillful with the feet, and then you want someone in there who's the leader and the organiser. So either Konsa Pearce, Konsa Bauer. For me, with Bauer going off, I would go Konsa Pearce, I think. But yeah, it's nice to have those headaches all over the pitch, because that's what we thought we were going to have from the start of the season, and we haven't really had much chance to do it. So expect some sort of injury this weekend to just push us back again, but it's nice for Carl to have those selection headaches to choose from.
Excellent. And of course, now the midfield. Now this the Bermuda Triangle of midfielders, I called it last week, with the other teams' midfielders coming in and getting lost because Charlton are out playing them there. You've seen the defensive midfield duo of Forster, Caskey and Cashy, and now the number 10 has been changing all over the place quite often this season. But Aribo played there last week, a player who's been involved in a lot of our more recent victories, but playing in the 10 rather than the defensive midfield. Does he stay there for a home game?
For me, it does. I think he's wasted at DM. I think Joe's wasted back there. I think his dynamism, I think we need him in that number 10 role yeah, Reeves is a good player, but I think Joe was harshly dropped. But then I can understand, because I think JFC is one of our better players on the ball. But yeah, I'll play him number 10, 100%, 100% I'll play him there.
And then on the wing, so you've got Fosse, who we're not sure if he is fit enough to start or not. You've got Kai, De Jairo coming. Does Marshall start again after coming off the bench last week? I mean, Tom, there's so many, you know, now we're getting these selection headaches again, and it's a nice question to have to ask, really.
Yeah, for me, I think I'd like to see Fosse back, provided he's fit. I agree with Nath, I'd have Aribo in the number 10. Kai and Reeves possibly weren't really that involved at MK, but I think Kai probably offers more width. I prefer Marshall and Fosu in an ideal world, but if not, then probably Kai out of the other two. I'm not sure Zyro will start. I think it's still a bit too early for him because he is still recovering from his injury. And yeah, McGuinness up top for sure. But you know, if you've got Zyro, Reeves, a Jose all on the bench, then that's not a bad position to be in, is it really?
Excellent stuff. So don't forget, if you want to come down to the game on Saturday, it's Football for a Fiver. It's only £5 ticket, so make your decision. If you fancy it, come down, get your £5 note out and buy yourself a ticket for what is a very big game. Now, let's have a look at some predictions. Tom?
1-1.
1-1. Who's going to be the Charlton Athletic goal scorer?
Marshall.
Mark Marshall. Nath?
3-1.
3-1, yeah.
They'll score last minute.
Yeah, okay, but it wouldn't matter because it'd be 3-0. Yeah. We'd have taken our chances. Did you Bowlers. Fancy... Who do you fancy turn up on the
goal,
on the score sheet?
I reckon we're going to see Big Josh.
Yep.
And I think we're going to get 2 sub goals. I think we're going to get one from Zyro and Saleh.
Excellent. Right. Okay. Now, very quickly, you've also done the cashew bag. You've got it sorted in time for the show this week. So, what have we gone for?
Well, it's a bit, I put like 4 votes, and everyone's gone for McGuinness 2-1.
Excellent. Right.
So
okay.
I put it on tonight. So it's my battery.
Hopefully, we will win our first cashy back bet of the season, which has proved to be a disaster.
We'll win last game of the season.
That's the season that has gone on. Right. That's all we've got time for on this week's big match preview. Thank you, Tom, for coming in.
Cheers, Louis.
Thank you, Nathan.
Cheers. See you for Saturday.
Yeah, I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live, the big match preview. We'll be back on Sunday to chat about whatever happens against the Shrews on Saturday. Let's hope it's 3 points in front of a bumper crowd here at the Valley. Come on, you Reds.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.